Welcome back into another episode of the Daft on Draft podcast. We're getting in on a roll here. I promise we'll get on a roll of 3 days a week eventually. I am now going out of town next week, though. So from Thursday until Tuesday. So probably two episodes again next week, maybe. But we are back. We're talking wide receivers. But before we get into it, obviously, I have to bring in my co-host, Dalton. Dalton Miller, how are you?
You know, I'm good. My preseason takes for a certain quarterback for a certain ranked team that lost in week zero didn't turn out very good. It looked like DJU was a bit confused post-snap almost consistently. I'll tell you what, that Georgia Tech defense was a ton of fun to watch. That Georgia Tech team just in general are a bunch of dogs, really, really physical. And they mixed stuff up pre and post snap defensively consistently. And they did a really good job with their match principles and did a lot of like poach and bait coverages as well. It was a really good time. And DJU did not have a very good time on top of the mechanical issues that we kind of talked about in text messages and him already not having a very big arm for being a very big guy is a little bit weird. It's why I've kind of comped him to Mason Rudolph a little bit, who, for all intents and purposes, doesn't have a huge arm, no matter what a former NFL fringe quarterback likes to say. I think it was a good weekend, and I'm ready to talk about a wide receiving group who I wasn't super high on going into it, but I think I found a little bit of love there.
Okay. I'm excited to hear about that because all of our exchanges were like, this class sucks. I don't want to talk about it. So I'm excited to hear who you found some love for. There as we get into it. But again, talking about this wide receiver class, you would think it would be, I guess you would expect more star power, but it's hard to compare a class against Marvin Harrison Jr., against Malik Nabers, against Romo Odunze. It's hard to compare a class against those guys. Like that's a pretty top-notch class. And now we go to this class where we're talking about wide receivers again. And you have to, again, we talked about this at the offensive tackles, you kind of have to look at everything as a year-by-year context. So, like, yeah, these wide receivers are stacking up well against each other, but, like, how do they stack up against years past? And unfortunately, they're following up a pretty darn good wide receiver class.
Yeah, and, I mean, when you just look at it in its totality, I think that there's going to be even a lot of good depth in this class because I think at this point, it's tough not to just have a plethora of pretty good weapons that you can find early on day three at the wide receiver position. It just always seems to kind of happen that way. There's just so many phenomenal athletes these days who kind of turn it on and figure it out. But I think when you look at this class overall, you're looking at, you know, out of the 10 of these guys, three, maybe four of them would have been in the top 10 for sure last year. And that's about it. And that's at its absolute best. I think when you look at the class last year, it was outrageous. But when you look at it in relation to the 2025 NFL draft class, there might be like eight guys that end up in the top 50 because there is actually a little bit of upside with this class that you can at least squint and see the talent compared to some of the other positions that we've talked about. You know, on the offensive side of the ball with the quarterback class not being very good, with the offensive tackle class being more of an offensive guard class, who knows how that's going to shake out. So I think when you look at it in its totality in relation to the 2025 class, I think that it's a pretty decent position group overall relative to the class.
And I think that's an important piece of context to continue to reiterate. It's a really strong defensive class in an offensive league. And so the offensive players are still going to get pushed up and overdrafted. So, like, we need to still talk about these guys, even if our big boards come out with, you know, 30 out of 50 players being on the defensive side of the ball or whatever. Like, it's an offensive league. These guys are going to get drafted high still. So, but talking about specific wide receivers now, there's really two that tend to come up to the top, right? Obviously, Emeka Egbuka went back to Ohio State for another year as well. And that was kind of a big name last summer where like people were like, this guy's a first round, or Ohio State's got two first round receivers. He still may have gone in the first round. I don't know. It would have been close. It would have been fringe. And then again, Ohio State has spent $20 million on the roster this year. So he, you know, go ahead and go back and go get your money. But the two names that do tend to rise to the top are Missouri's Luther Burden and Arizona's Tedrow McMillan. So we're going to spend probably the majority of the time talking about those two, but we will talk about some, have conversations about six or seven other guys. But Dalton, starting with Tedrow McMillan, Luther Burden, talk about kind of what separates the two from one another and kind of where he would lie. Yeah, I mean, they're totally different players.
How do I separate the two? I
mean, one plays 80% in the slot and the other one plays 85% outside. So yeah, I mean, obviously, maybe that was a terrible way to phrase it. Let's start with Luther Burden. Let's talk about Luther Burden.
No, I mean, they're a dichotomy of one another. They are completely different players. One of them is 6'5" and has, you know, length for absolute days. And Luther Burden, to me, and this is going to sound negative, and I guess at the end of the day, it is a sort of a negative, reminds me a little bit more of a watered-down Deebo Samuel. And that's not talking about him as an absolute prospect, like where he's going to be in relation to where Deebo was, because obviously Deebo was a second-round pick. Luther Burden will not be a second-round pick. But when I look at him, I look at, you know, some of the inconsistencies as a route runner, in my opinion, that were a lot like Deebo Samuel coming out. And I like Samuel coming out, but it just wasn't all there from a natural footwork perspective, I would say. I think some of the above the shoulder stuff with him is good as a route runner, being able to create separation, but it's just not that absolute instant separation quickness I think that I see from him. But you see the really impressive lower half that he uses to consistently break tackles and be a menace after the catch. And that's kind of what drew me to the Deebo Samuel comp. Now, I don't think that he's somebody who's going to be taking the ball out of the backfield and be used like that, but somebody who is just very good with getting the ball and knowing exactly what he wants to do when he gets the ball in his hands. He knows where the pressure is coming from defensively. He knows where guys are, and he understands how to beat them. Even before that ball touches his hands, he already knows what his next move is going to be. And he does that without those concentration drops that you see from a lot of these guys. Now, the other thing that I will say about him is that he consistently makes the impossible or the very improbable look easy. And then there are times where I wish that he finished a little bit better in traffic or a little bit better when he is climbing the ladder. So there's some absolutely outrageous film from Luther Burden, and he is going to blow up again this year in that offense. But there is also a lot of schemed catches for him as well. So we're talking, you know, the crossers against zone coverage where he's running wide open and they overloaded the zone and he's just running with nobody around him. There's a lot of easy in that offense as well. So as much as I like him and I like the profile, I want to see him have a little bit stiffer competition when it comes to going up against guys in one-on-one situations and separating against man coverage.
Yeah, which we might not see a whole lot of again this year. If Missouri runs back the same offense, and they have no reason to, they're returning their quarterback, they're returning the bulk of their offensive line, they're returning the bulk of their wide receivers. So, like, he played 82% of his snaps at the slot last year. There's no reason to think he's not going to do that again this year. And so that's a huge piece of context that we need and we don't always get from players. It's like, well, what is their body of work against?
And it's something that we have, something that we've knocked guys on. Justin Jefferson is the greatest example of a guy who we all kind of knocked because he played mostly in the slot. We didn't see him against press very often. And he's now the best, arguably the best wide receiver in the NFL. So it's not something that he can't do. It's a lot like some of these other guys that we've talked about. It's just something that we haven't seen.
Right. As opposed to like a Garrett Wilson, who did start predominantly in the slot. But then as he got older in Ohio State system, he played like 80% of his snaps outside the numbers by his junior year. And you want to talk about a guy with that quickness, to, that innate ability to separate right off the line of scrimmage, to use his innate quickness to create blind spots and route running. Like, that was Garrett Wilson. People got really nitpicky with the extra steps he would take on his routes. But like, I'm a firm believer that if you take an extra step, but if that extra step has a sudden purpose, take that extra freaking step. So, and that was Garrett Wilson to a T. And so hopefully maybe we can see a little bit of Luther Burden, but like, I doubt it, because again, they're running back, the whole crew. So why would they change something? If it ain't broke, don't fix it. So that is going to be kind of a point of contention that we might not get an answer to. The same with kind of the route tree thing, right? You said it's a lot of crossers, and that's, I think, using a wide receiver from this year, that's something that Brian Thomas Jr. got knocked a lot for, because all he did was run slot fades. All he did was run nines, comebacks, sideline fades. Like, that's all he did. And so people were like, well, does he have a full route tree? And that's something you don't know until they get to the NFL level. Or unless, again, this is why I like going to the wide receiver quarterback day at the combine, because you can kind of get a feel for that. Like, I went this past year and I saw Troy Franklin try to run some freaking routes. And that dude was stiff as a board. That dude couldn't move his hips. Yeah. I saw Javon Baker, who also had a very thin route tree at UCF, come out. And he looked phenomenal running every single route they asked him to do. So, like, that's why I like to go to those days at the combine as well, just to get feel, because that's something that you might not see on their tape.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, the way that they move, their physiology is massively important for their ability to get open. And I never saw it with Troy Franklin, and Troy Franklin might come out and end up being a very fine wide receiver at the NFL level, but people were talking about him being a top five guy, top four guy. And I never saw that. And it's no, you know, knock on him. He was actually kind of slippery after the catch, but he just didn't have that natural fluidity that you'd like to see from guys who are going to consistently separate at the NFL level.
Yeah, I kind of got off a little tangent of breaking down things you might not see on tape.
It happens.
I project that, but whatever. But as you were saying, adding to Burden's like after the catch ability, 724 of his yards came after the catch of his 1,200. So that's a pretty good number. Only four drops on the year. So 4% drop rate on the amount of, I mean, he had 86 targets, or no, I'm sorry, 120 targets. So like, it's not terrible at all. It's not great at all, or not bad at all. But again, that body of work in the slot, can he separate naturally? Can he win above the ladder? What does he look like with the ball in his hand? Like, we know what he looks like with the ball in his hands, but like, what happens down the field? And how does that translate to the NFL level? Moving to Tetero McMillan, though. I feel like, again, complete polar opposite players here. 6'5", big dude, long as could be. Go ahead and talk about McMillan for a little bit.
I mean, he's a shooting guard at the NBA level. I mean, he is a long wing. That's exactly how he is built. And he's not as thick as Drake London. But like, that's kind of how I see him, to where like, oh, like for a 6'4 dude, I'm qualifying it like that. He's pretty quick, but it's with the qualifier that he is 6'4" and he's not going to move like Garrett Wilson does. And so what does that look like again at the NFL level, when you're going to get beat up a little bit by physical corners, that all of those guys are going to be better than the guys that you saw at the Pac-12. They're going to be more physical. They're going to be more athletic. So are you going to be able to win in tight quarters? And that's what he's going to find himself in. He's going to be in a lot more tight quarters at the NFL level than he will or is at the college level. Now, I love the way that he finds space versus zone coverage. I think he's a really heady route runner when it comes to that. I think the long strides, you know, can hurt you sometimes, but I think that they really help him when he is stacking guys, when he wins off the line of scrimmage quickly. He is able to immediately create separation and stack guys. And then just an outlandish catch radius. I mean, it's one that only comes around maybe two or three times in a decade when you are watching guys just go out and catch passes that other guys wouldn't even be able to get their fingertips on. And when you have a catch radius like that, you can breed a lot of confidence. And there are a lot of teams at the NFL level. We saw it with the Atlanta Falcons for a while. Everybody is 6'4", 6'5", or bigger. And they just go and they, you know, try to throw the ball up to them. But then there is, you know, the true lack of true agility because he is 6'5". It's a lot like when I talk about, you know, tall, long corners not being great at mirroring. It's just not going to happen with your body style. So on top of that, with that body style also comes, it's very hard to be very good after the catch. When you are built like that, if you are also not 240 pounds, and then at that point you're a tight end in the league. And so the yak is just not really there with him as well. And I saw when he really tries to transition hard on the outside, stop routes, things like that, he gets a little bit out under his skis, and then he will fall, just straight up fall over as he is trying to plant. So those are kind of the things that I saw with him. A really, not physical, but a really physically dominant player, just looking at him. The first guy off the bus kind of guy, and somebody who you can have a lot of confidence throwing the ball up to because of that catch radius.
Yeah, and he's a guy that showed up. Like, again, when I'm watching tape, I like to watch who are your best match. Like, again, we talked about this last time. Who are your head-to-heads? All of, like, the tougher games on his schedule are the games where he elevated his play. Like, the bowl game against Oklahoma, 160 yards on 10 catches. Against Travis Hunter, 107 yards on 9 catches. Like, he's a guy, again, like, earlier in the season, Washington, not as impressive. USC went out 6 catches, 138 yards. Like, the bigger opponents on his schedule is when this guy shows up. That Arizona offense is a lot of fun. I know a lot of people like Noah Fifita, but I think body typing is one thing that the NFL tends to have right with quarterbacks. But
yeah, he's a really fun player, but yeah, really out of control a lot of the time too.
Yeah, for sure. But I also do like that he has that alignment versatility that a lot of big guys don't have. A lot of big guys, and I think you could include Drake London in this, you got to stick him on the boundary. Like, you got to stick him on the boundary. And I don't think that's necessarily the case with McMillan. Again, he played 24% of his snaps in the slot last year. That's a pretty decent number. And it's more than just, you know, running a slot fade. You can do that with big guys, but or run up the seam. It's more than that with him.
And especially at the college level, because we see a lot of the times, hey, you're this receiver, you're going to line up on the boundary, on the left side, on every single play. And that's where you're going to be. And I hate that. And it makes them really easy to find on tape. But that is something that we see a lot at the college level. It's just easier to create your offense around guys who where you know where they're going to be down in and down out. And so it is good to see a little bit of alignment versatility with him.
Yeah. One thing that I do have, which you wouldn't think of because he's got the size, he's got the catch radius. He was only 50% in contested catch situations last year. So I do think he is a little thin in his frame. And I do think through contact at the catch point, even when he does have the ability to naturally separate above up the ladder, I still think I need more like play strength through contact, I think.
Yes, no, absolutely. And it extends to his ability after the catch as well, or his lack of ability after the catch.
Yeah, so those are the two big between Burden and McMillan. Those are the two in this class that people tend to go back and forth on. You said you act like you're about to say something there.
There might be a third. Ooh. There might be a third. I want to see more because I've only watched two games of his and a third where I was watching a defender that he was playing against. But there could be a third.
Okay. Is he on our list?
He is on our list, absolutely. We're going to talk about him.
Okay. Okay, I think I might, maybe, I'm not going to try to guess. Okay, next up.
Try to guess, and we'll talk about him if you guess so, right. You get one guess.
Okay, in the Travis Hunter episode, you had mentioned that he beat up on Travis Hunter. Is it that guy?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's him.
Well, let's go there next then. I was going to go somewhere else next, but let's go to Alec Iamanner, the Stanford big dude. So let's talk about him. International guy. It's a pretty unique pathway to college football as well, to go through an international program to Stanford. Mm-hmm. And now we're talking about him as, you said, potentially the top wide receiver in the class.
So he did. He beat up on Travis Hunter, and you know Travis Hunter played like 170 snaps in that game. So if you outrun the guy who's really fast, but he's got like 12% in his tank, you might not be that fast. And I don't think that Ellick is the fastest wide receiver in the world, but he reminds me of kind of where the NFL is going back to with some of these guys who are 6'2", 215, 220 pounds. But you're at a point in personal training where you're getting these guys who aren't just big and strong anymore, but also have impressive feet. And I think that his foot speed at the line of scrimmage, particularly his route repertoire, is really good. I think that he's got a good feel for attacking man leverage, and that's part of getting open, especially when you are a bigger wide receiver, when you don't have, you know, kind of that same separation quickness as a guy who is a little bit smaller, is you have to be able to play and manipulate defenders. And I thought that that's something that he did really well. Strong feet, strong eyes on stopping routes and double moves. He's really able to separate on those as well. And then he's got the physicality to, for lack of a better term, push off and get separation at the top of routes, stopping routes without being, you know, getting it called. Now, I don't think he's a true burner down the field. I don't think that he is very creative after the catch. And for being, you know, a thicker guy, I would like to see him break more tackles. I think that he also could be a little bit more consistent with his hands in downfield opportunities, specifically like along the stem. I think that his hands need to get a little bit more accurate so he doesn't get jammed up quite as much, you know, in outside of that 5-yard contact window. And then, you know, he will sometimes fully extend his arm at the end of routes or at the top of routes. And you might get called for that a little bit more at the NFL level, but it also helps you get open. So I'll take it.
Yeah, I like him too. But again, you mentioned it. Like, he has this like thick boy frame, but doesn't play to the advantages of his
Frame. You want him to play more like Mike Evans than he does.
Yeah, yeah. Or Debo, like somewhere in between there. Like, if you can put the ball in his hand, just let him turn his legs. That too, but he doesn't. You mentioned the hands. He did drop 6 passes last year, about 8%, close to 9% of his passes. Also below 50% in contested situations. He will be remembered for that Colorado game. That Colorado game is going to carry him far. At least through the summer. He's got to play games this year, obviously. But at least through the summer, pretty exclusively an outside wide receiver at the college level right now, too. But again, he plays in a really funky offense. Again, Stanford's head coach came from Sac State. And Sac State, for all those years, was known for having all of that, like, the weird, weird stuff going on. So a little bit of stuff to kind of sift through there as well. There's a reason that he's talked about. I need to dive in a little bit more as well. I've really just watched that Colorado game and then the Notre Dame game at the end of the season with Benjamin Moore, you know, the big matchups there, but there is a lot to like. I'm a little more hesitant on him. I think I need to see more just because, again, like, he does a lot of things well, but like, there's nothing dense at one.
Yeah. For me, it's more about the other two guys than it is about him.
That's fair. That's also fair. Dalton and I text a lot off the air about this class, and we're like, yeah, it is what it is. Again, it's not last year's class. So moving to Columbus, Ohio, where I'm currently sitting down at as well right now, because I live here, Emeka Egbuka. So again, Egbuka was considered by a lot a first round prospect last year. He opted to go back to Ohio State and return for his senior season. Again, Ohio State loaded up offensively. And so all of those guys, except, you know, Marvin Harrison Jr., obviously, but like all of the underclassmen who were pretty highly rated, they all said, we're going back. So I think they all had a pretty consensus decision that we're going to go try to win this one. So, so he went back. I think he had a bit of a down year as well compared to his sophomore season as well. Man, you talk about play strength and really wanting to see it in some wide receivers. And I think that especially rings true with Egbuka. I struggle to see him play through contact well at all right now.
Yeah, for me, he's kind of that one guy. And I love his game because he's just a guy who knows how to get open. Mm-hmm. And that's something that is missing specifically in this class. Now, last year's class, when you were looking at all of those freaks of nature, he was never going to be able to stack up against those guys athletically. And so going back, especially with, you know, dealing with some injuries and having a down year, I think was the correct move for him to go back and have another year, especially because the quarterback play last year wasn't any good anyway. So he might as well go back and try to at least have a better quarterback to play with. So he did that, and I think it was the right call for him. I hope that he stays healthy because, in my opinion, he is kind of the one guy in this class who, if you have to ask a guy, hey, can you go get open? His answer will be yes, and he won't be lying to you.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think what I'm also confused about is that
so one thing that I just want to bring up real quick, one thing that I am confused about is some of the play strength stuff. When I see him get some scheme touches and be really good in those scheme touches, like after the catch and having a little bit of vision, but just overall, there is some finesse to his game in other situations, and it doesn't make sense. It just doesn't make sense because it's not consistent.
Yeah. His ability to get open and the finesse that he plays with reminds me of another Ohio State wide receiver who is pretty good for the New Orleans Saints right now. You know, that's a lot of – I had some play strength concerns.
Yeah, just not as fast.
Nowhere near as fast. But I had some concerns about Olave's play strength coming out of Ohio State too. But he's kind of proved like, well, as long as I can separate, nobody can touch me. It's not that big of a deal. So, but again, Egbuka's not that explosive, not that fast. Again, he plays predominantly in the slot, and I think that's going to be his role at the NFL level. Like, I don't think he's going to beat up on dudes outside the number very often. He's not a guy who's going to win against press very often. But for a guy like that, his yak is also not impressive. I don't know if you feel that way, but...
I wouldn't say it's impressive.
Yeah.
I think that it's more impressive than you would think given some of the other aspects of his game and the way that he plays from a finesse standpoint. Yeah. I do think that his contact balance is decent. He has good vision, but at the end of the day, he just doesn't have great, you know, like natural quickness. Even though he gets open all of the time, he is not just a naturally explosive guy. He is more of a heady route runner who knows what he's doing, and that kind of gets him open. And he's fluid, which helps him as well. It's just not super explosive in anything he does.
Yeah. This goes back to put into context the conversation that I had with Jordan Reed about scouting running backs. He's like, dude, you could be a 4.3 running back, but if you don't have vision or patience, like, you're running a 4.5 on the field. And if you're a 4.5 running back who is really smooth and really quick, you're running a 4.5 on the field. So I think that really translates to Emeka Egbuka's game, is because, like, he is really smooth and he is really heady and he plays with smarts and he plays with patience and he knows where he's going with the football. So, like, he might be a 4.48, 4.47 kind of guy, but, like, his game speed is going to be 4.48, 4.47 compared to, you know, a guy who runs Anthony Schwartz, right? It runs a 4.2, but he plays at 4.5 because he's always thinking and he's not very strong and he can't stick his hips. And Egbuka can all of those things really, really well. And he's refined. He's a refined wide receiver who lacks some physical gifts, I think. It's probably the best way to paraphrase.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to a wide receiver that not a lot of people have a lot of hype around. Maybe not now they do because Dane Brugler put him in his top 50. But he played
now
at
a hype will start. Now
it'll start. Yeah, but he played at a G5 level last year at the University of Houston. Now is transferring to Miami because Miami's boosters have unbelievably deep pockets and they'll pay anybody any amount of money, as seen by their quarterback who declared for the draft just to get them to pay him some more money. And then he said, okay, fine, I'll come. But Sam Brown, again, Houston transfer, fifth-year player now, going to Miami, listed at 6'2", 195. So he's got a pretty long frame. What do you like about Sam?
Americans are durable. We take pride in hard work and high quality. American Giant makes durable, quality clothing right here in the USA. Because what we wear reflects who we are. When you buy American Giant, you're not just wearing the best clothes money can buy. You're helping keep jobs and pride in your own backyard. Premium clothing built to last decades, like it should. Get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code RIGHTHERE24.
When I watched, I could not stop seeing Jerry Jeudy. Mm. Couldn't stop seeing Jerry Jeudy.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It's a good and a bad thing. It's the just unbelievably easy, smooth agility, the easy acceleration, and just not very good play strength whatsoever. And that's just kind of what I saw with him. I think he's got good speed. I don't know if he's a true burner either, which, you know, Jerry Jeudy ran pretty well, but I don't think Jerry Jeudy is like a natural downfield issue as well for defenses. So, like, the thing that I really liked about him was the ability to kind of tempo speed and uncover against coverage. I also thought that he was really, really good when he got into zone coverage as well. And so for me, those things were the positives. And then also one thing that I did note from him that is different from Jerry Jeudy was kind of the ability to finish despite not having the overall play strength. The strength to finish through contact was there, and he was a willing finisher over the middle as well, which from some of those, you know, thinner guys is not something that you see very often. I also thought, unlike Jerry Jeudy, and what kind of pushes him down a little bit for me, was as impressive as his feet are naturally, it's that ability to manipulate defenders and get open that he's just kind of missing right now, or was missing. And for a guy who already has 4 years under his belt, you have to wonder, you know, he is going to a bigger school now, but is that going to get any better? Is it going to click for him to be able to naturally separate? I don't know.
Yeah. And I think there are reasons to question whether or not under Mario Cristobal is the place to develop that as well.
Yep.
Just given the route trees that his wide receivers have typically ran and the successes that his quarterbacks have typically had under his program versus what they do when they leave. I guess there's one really big example of that, but who plays for the Los Angeles Chargers. But I'm just not sure Miami is the place to go to develop something you're missing like that either, because he's not going to run the routes where you'll be trying to create blind spots, where you'll be trying to intentionally stem and then snap off. It's just not the kind of place that he's going to learn to do that. I do think Cam Ward is as volatile as Cam Ward is, and I am pretty far out on Cam Ward as an NFL prospect, but I do think he is accurate when he is on time and when he's trusting himself. Donovan Smith, not so much. So I think a big thing that sticks out to me when I was watching Sam Brown is like, man, he's getting some targets he's got no chance that they can play on. And so I want to see him playing with a quarterback who's at least going to put the ball in the vicinity of his frame. I mean, like looking at some of these games, like, his last game of the season, well, I guess UCF, he didn't have any targets, but week 12 against Oklahoma State, 8 targets, 3 catches for 39 yards. Against Cincinnati, 7 targets for 5 catches for 12 yards. Just like some unbelievable situations where it's like, just put the ball on it. Sam Houston State, 9 targets, 4 catches. So like, I want to see, and I think Cam Ward will do this because accuracy is not the issue with Cam Ward. When he is engaged, he can put the ball on the money. So I do think we're going to see Sam put in a better position to make a play on some footballs that he just had no shot at last year. And I don't mean that I guess it is naturally kind of a slight at Donovan Smith, and I'm pretty far out on him as a prospect as well. But I do think there will be more opportunities at Miami, even if the route tree is still pretty narrow. Any final thoughts on Brown before we move on?
No.
All right. Next one is also a transfer guy. This pipeline, the Alabama to Steve Sarkisian pipeline, has been wide open the past few years here. But Isaiah Bond going from Alabama to Texas. We want to talk about a guy that does have that burner ability and does have the ability to make wild plays downfield. Isaiah Bond's that kind of guy. I don't love his frame. I don't love his contested catch situation. That play strength is, again, kind of relevant there when we're talking about play strength with Isaiah Bond.
It's an issue with a lot of these guys.
But he's going to the ideal situation where he's just going to naturally be able to run into green grass. And so he's going to rack up 1,300 yards this year and maybe 11 touchdowns just because Steve Sarkisian, he's the Xavier Worthy of this year for Texas. Like, he's the Xavier Worthy of the 2024 Longhorns.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fine comp for him as a player. Now, he was wearing number 17. I got really excited. I missed Jalen Waddle in that jersey.
Oh.
But, you know, when I watch Isaiah Bond, you do see a little bit of, you know, that downfield burner ability. I mean, and it's easy acceleration. The first strength I have written down in here is just juice in all capital letters. It's so easy to see, and it's something that I think is really missing in this class. It's just a guy who you know can absolutely take the top off of a defense. And I also think that, you know, for the play strength issues, I do think that he makes himself a pretty difficult target on the outside at the line of scrimmage. And you see him play on the outside. And for his frame, that's something that, you know, probably not going to happen all of the time at the NFL level. But if you can play on the outside, it adds a little bit of a layer. Or maybe not if you can play on the outside, but if you can survive on the outside and against press man coverage. I thought that, you know, the repertoire of releases were good, because they have to be if he is going to get off of the line with that build and with that lack of play strength. So I do like a lot from what I see from him. You need to see it more. That offense last year, I know that there's, again, Jalen Milroe, really exciting player, but playing on time, not really a thing for him either. So I'm ready to see him in an offense that is going to be entirely timing based, and give him, like you said, the opportunity to run to green grass.
Yeah. Which is what he's good at. I think, again, he has a really good foundation of what you want for a wide receiver. And he has some physical traits that you love. Again, that juice. And so I do think Bond has the ability to be a riser. Again, we're not going to see him run a very thick route tree.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. But again, I'm to the point where I don't care about a college route tree, I think. Like, I used to care a lot more, but now it's like...
Exactly.
But now it's like, okay, well, if they come into the NFL level, they're going to run it all. And if they can, they can. If they can't, they can't. And you can kind of get an idea of how fluid a guy is on their tape anyway. And then you can get a really good idea if you go and watch them in person as well. So I don't really care about route tree that much anymore. Again, unless it's like, I think Cedric Tillman is maybe a good example of this, where he's playing at Tennessee and he's 6'4", 220 pounds. I've got a pretty good idea about the kind of route tree that guy's going to be able to run, right? So like, but Isaiah Bond is 5'11", 180. If I don't think he can run every route, or if he can't run every route, then like, how is that dude so stiff at that size? But his tape is evident that he's not stiff. So lots to work with. Again, we'll see what happens in that Texas offense, or we'll see if they even scheme away a defender even within 10 yards of him this year. But he'll have plenty of opportunities to really explode this year with Texas. Let's stick with that Red River rivalry. Jeez, man, my tongue is tied today. Oklahoma, they landed a transfer wide receiver from Purdue as well, Deion Burks, also in Dan Brugler's top 50. Dalton, why don't you start with Burks?
Another guy who I have, you know, this for Burks, I had speed written in all caps for him. It's what really stands out to me. Talk about a kind of a lackluster frame as well.
5'9", 190 is what he's listed at. So he's probably 5'8", 180.
Yeah. He's very small. And you can see that. It was funny to watch Purdue actually give him a bunch of contested catch situations that he just had absolutely no chance of converting on. But he kind of reminds me a little bit, and again, it's kind of scouting the helmet, but a former player that played at Purdue, just Hollywood. Energizer bunny feet, man. He's got those kind of natural feet that, you know, made me enamored with a lot of defensive backs in the past couple of years. Jeff Gladney being one who, you know, rest in peace, obviously, was one who just, his foot speed was outrageous. And I thought that he could stick with anybody. And Deion Burks is a guy who has the type of feet that if he develops a little bit more as a route runner and is able to kind of learn to attack blind spots, manipulate defenders, you know, especially off defenders, because there's a lot of times where he's just kind of bashing into them instead of, you know, trying to take leverage and then break off of them. And so for me, if he can figure that out, this is a dude who's going to be able to separate at will. But on top of that, concentration drops are also a thing, because I think he had like a 14 or a 15% drop rate last year. And that also can kind of just come with the territory of being a smaller wide receiver. Those guys, a lot of them really struggle with that. That's why I liked Malik Washington from Virginia so much last year, because even though he was very, you know, small as well, he was going up and getting the ball and catching absolutely everything for that football team. And so for me, I want to see it at another level here, and it will be interesting to see.
Who's Oklahoma's offensive coordinator now? Because Jeff Levy got the job at Mississippi State.
I don't know. That's a good question.
Seth Littrell. Ooh, I'm actually really excited. It is Seth. Yeah, I'm very excited about that.
Okay.
He got some air raid back in Oklahoma now. So he'll be running some routes. He'll be touching every blade of grass on the football field. So I also want to point out that he won't be playing 92% of his snaps outside the numbers at Oklahoma the way he was at Purdue.
No.
Like, that's not going to happen.
Outrageous.
That's ridiculous. A 5'9", 190 guy playing 92% of his snaps outside the numbers. I was going to say, because I thought it was still Jeff Levy until I was like, oh, no, it's not. And that's why I looked it up. But I was going to say, well, he won't be doing that at Oklahoma. It was like, wait, no, Jeff Levy played Elijah Moore outside the numbers, like 90% of his snaps at Ole Miss. But he will not be playing 92% of his snaps outside of that's a talent issue at Purdue more than it is anything else. And that's not going to be the case at an SEC school that has a lot of donors like OU. So, but again, the drops are a big thing. The frame is just a natural inhibitant to contested catch situations. Again, you should be throwing him 25 contested catch situations, which Purdue did last year. He brought down 6 naturally, but again, 8 drops, 14.5%. That's a pretty big issue. I would also like to see him do a little bit, like they didn't put him in a lot of position to just like make a play with the football in his hands either.
No, not at all.
Like, if he's your best playmaker, wouldn't you want to do that? Wouldn't you just scheme him the football? And like, they didn't do it.
No.
So I think there's a pretty big usage issue, but from a scouting perspective, I think I am personally out on a guy in the top 50 who's going to come in at 5'8", 180, probably. I don't know how you feel about that, but I would be pretty far out on that.
They have to get open all of the time, mm-hmm. which right now he doesn't do.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of where I'm at as well. Again, the next guy we're going to talk about too also has a really thin frame and is going to a school that's going to this transfer portal stuff. It's like, oh, this guy's at a new school. This guy's at a new school.
Yep.
He again is going to an offense that's going to give him plenty of opportunities to make plays down the field. And he's going to be open down the field because he has legit 4.3 speed. But again, like the rest of this class, he is rail thin. So let's talk about Evan Stewart at Oregon. Again, I thought he left a pretty good situation at Texas A&M to come to Oregon for a good situation. But yeah, what do you got on Evan?
Yeah, easily distinguishable juice. And I believe he actually has like a 4.36 laser time run. So we know he's going to be fast. Flexibility, acceleration, it's all there with him. He also has a knack for making the impossible catch look very, very easily. And he has naturally impressive footwork. The weaknesses are the weaknesses. He's got a wiry frame. Is crazy. His play strength isn't that great. Something that we've talked about for 40 minutes now.
Yes.
And like a lot of these other guys, he must improve his route nuance to be able to maximize his consistency in separation. He also has an inconsistent catch rate through 2 collegiate seasons. Now, some of that is quarterback play being very, very tough to get around with the injuries at Texas A&M. But, you know, for me, also a little bit of a tumultuous situation with the coaching staff there and everything that kind of went on behind the scenes at Texas A&M. And probably one of the bigger reasons why he ended up at Oregon anyways. But you want to see it. He should have a very good situation in Oregon to be able to produce at a higher level. He's somebody who, even as a true freshman, you thought, this is a dude, you know, even though he is, you know, 180 pounds soaking wet. So you can play that way as a freshman. You can really flash like that. Bit of a down year, a little bit like Amika Egbuka last year. But you really want to see what he's able to do at Oregon with another wide receiver who is unbelievably quick, but is even smaller, like much smaller than Tez Washington.
Yes. Tez Johnson. Yeah.
Tez Johnson. Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking of Malik Washington still.
Yeah. Yeah, Troy Franklin's kind of the same way, though, right? He was 6'1", 170 pounds. So, like,
yeah.
But he could also fly on a vertical plane. He could fly. And I think that's what they're going to ask. I mean, he's going to run. They're either going to just have him catch a screen. He's going to run a 9, or he's going to run a stick. Like, that's it.
Yep.
So, if he could do that, get to the combine and then run some live routes in front of some NFL teams and get to your workouts and prove you can sink your hips and do all that other stuff. But again, he's a track star, and some of those track stars are like pretty linear athletes. Again, speaking of Anthony Schwartz, is just the easy comparison, right?
Like, yeah.
He runs a 4.2, but dude's stiff as a board. He couldn't sink his hips at all. No nuance to his game other than running in a straight line. So you want to be able to prove that you're more than vertical speed And if you can't do that on the football field, which again has the opportunity to prove that, I mean, he can do some stuff after the catch. Obviously, if you could see a dude be slippery after the catch and make dudes miss and put his foot in the ground and switch fields and do stuff like that, yeah, you get a pretty good indication. So I'm excited to see that. His A dot is ridiculous. His A dot is absolutely ridiculous. Last year at Texas A&M, he averaged 14 yards at depth per catch last year. But there are some games like the Auburn game, he's sitting at 18. The Arkansas game, he's sitting at 25. The Tennessee game, he's sitting at 20. So, like, I mean, they're just throwing darts at him down the field. And that's kind of where his strength is, again, because he's not a natural separator to beat press, to win underneath, to win along the boundary, to do all of that kind of stuff. So you want to get him where he can start striding it out a little bit. But he's in a good situation. But he, again, he's got some nuanced things to prove here, which is just like you mentioned. It's like the overall theme of the class, man. Like, this class is what it is. We've talked about every single guy isn't like, they've got bad frames. They're not good through contact. It's just like, it's just kind of the class we've gotten. Sometimes that happens.
Yep. You can't always have 2024. It just doesn't happen that way.
Yep. No DK Metcalf in this class.
No DK
Metcalf. But the last wide receiver we're going to talk about does stand at 6'3" and 210 pounds. So we've got a pretty decent frame to talk about on this guy. Ole Miss's Trey Harris.
Yeah, he's definitely not Debo. He's definitely not DK. He's definitely not, you know, somebody who looks like he could be a competitive bodybuilder or anything. But Trey Harris can move, man. And it is a lot of fun to watch him, specifically at the line of scrimmage. The way that he beats press coverage, his releases are outstanding. And for an Ole Miss wide receiver, that is not something that I'm used to seeing. And so
Elijah Moore could do it, but he was also 5'8". Like,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Trey Harris, I thought watching him, I thought he was 5'11". And then when you look at the listing and he is much bigger than that, I said, okay. So I started looking at him a little bit closer as I was watching him, as I was very, very, it was a pleasant surprise, and it was about the only pleasant surprise watching this class. I kind of knew what I was going to get from most of these guys, but the manipulation of soft and off coverage with him was there. Like, the ability to separate versus man coverage was there. Start stop is there. He was sneaky physical at the top of his routes. And I said he was sneaky physical because I didn't realize he was actually like 6'1", 210 and not 5'11", 190. And so when I was watching him, I was just really impressed with the overall package of somebody who actually looked, it's going to be pushed the rest of the class down and kind of talk poorly of them, but like somebody who actually looks like a professional wide receiver. And you can squint, you can see it with Trey Harris. And again, didn't expect to see it from Ole Miss, didn't expect to see it from him, but a very pleasant surprise in this wide receiver class. Made a couple of plays after the catch as well. I don't think that he is particularly impressive after the catch. I don't think that he has outrageous long speed either, but the ability to separate, he's fast enough to stack downfield as well. And so just a really fun watch in a sea of, well, this guy has this issue and this guy has this issue. Mm-hmm. This is a guy who is prototypical height, weight, and can move and is a lot of fun to watch.
How fast do you think he'll run?
4.5.
Flat?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm tempted to like...
You think he's slower?
No. I was really tempted to comp him to another Ole Miss wide receiver who is also just stout and just bullies everybody, but I don't want to comp him to an all pro NFL player.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to do that. AJ Brown after the catch is unbelievable. I mean, he's a bully. He's a bully. I mean,
he's also 230.
Yeah, correct. So, but I think if you know how to use your hands without the football in your hands as a wide receiver, it will take you a very long way. And that's why out of all of these guys that we've talked about, I think I'm willing to bet on Harris as the guy to take a next step. I mean, he's got good quarterback play. He's in an offensive system with Lane Kiffin where he's going to be featured. Everything is set up for him to far exceed the 986 yards that he had this year. Like,
yeah,
he should be able to put his name on the map. And again, he's not, you're not, he's another guy you're not going to see run the entire route tree. I don't, again, I don't care. I'll watch him live and I'll make a decision from there. But he's got the savvy things that I love watching in wide receivers.
I can consistently watch him make a corner in press coverage look silly with a diamond release on a slant route. And if you can do that consistently and not just get slammed in the face when you are trying to cut back inside, mm-hmm. you already have a foot in my door.
Yep. Yep. 100%. 100%. So out of all the guys we've talked about, like, he's the one that I'm most excited to watch in 2024 to see what kind of step he takes forward. Again, wide receivers, you have to watch like 30 because the 30 of them will get drafted because everybody's yeah. taking wide receivers the second, like from rounds 2 through 4, 2 through 5, everybody's taking wide receivers. So there's just so many to work through. And we only talked about 9. I'm sure there'll be risers. Like it's going to happen. But that's just a pretty decent primer. So Dalton, I think the thing to do is of these 9 we've talked about, kind of lay them out how we would rank them preseason.
Do we just want to both start at 1 and go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5? I think that's how we should do it. Number 1 for me, I've gone back and forth on this a lot. I like what I get from McMillan more right now. Okay. But for me, Burton has the type of upside that I can't bet against in the summer.
I was also going to say Burton because I just think he can just do more with the football.
Yeah.
Like he can just do more with the football. And that's game-changing playmaking ability. And so I think Burton 1, McMillan 2 for me right now as well.
Yep, that's how I see it. For me at number 3, Elkanah Umanor. I just really, really enjoyed watching his game. Just the ability to kind of be good at a little bit of everything. And in this class where there are guys who have absolutely glaring weaknesses, to just be like an all-around guy, I think is a nice little step.
Yeah. This is where it's tough for me. Like, do I go with the physical traits or do I go with savvy? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, I could very easily say, well, Bond's got the most juice. So maybe I'll put Bond at 3, but like Ekpuka and Harris are like, they just know how to play the position. And I think I'm going to, which is funny because I feel like I talked really negatively. Like everything I talked about him was really negative on this podcast, but I think I'm still going to stick with Ekpuka at 3 just because like, if you can consistently get open and catch the football, know what you're doing with the ball in your hands, know how to use your hands, know how to create blind spots, find a role at the NFL level more than anything. And he'll have a role at the NFL because he has such a high floor. I think I'm okay with that at 3 right now.
Yeah, and Ekpuka's at 4 for me. And just for transparency purposes, he was my number 2 wide receiver going into the season last year behind his teammate. That's how much I liked Emeka Ekpuka heading into the year last year. I'm just down on him a little bit because of the injuries and because, you know, he's not amazing. Like, the physical profile isn't fantastic. And so my love for him has died a little bit, but it's one of those things where like you're just kind of married for a long time. You still love the person, but it's not like that new relationship anymore. So the spark is still there and you can still do things, Emeka, mm-hmm. to spark that relationship again this year. And I hope that you do.
Yeah. Yeah. So for 4 for me, again, I'm not going to go with the physical traits here either. I'm going to go with Trey Harris at 4. I think, again,
love it.
If you can stack, if you can be a bully down the field, if you can win without the ball in your hand, like know how to use your hands without the ball in your hands and know how to create subtle cushions, subtle areas of separation, like you will play on Sundays. It doesn't matter if you're on a 4-5, you play on Sundays. And so I think in this class, I'm going to go with Trey Harris at 5 there.
At 4.
Yes, 4. Sorry. Yes.
Yeah, 4. Yeah, yeah. 4 at 4. Yeah. And I'm going to go with Harris at 5. And I really, really like Trey Harris. And this was a tough decision for me as well because my 6th guy would have been Isaiah Bond, and it's the difference between the, just for lack of a better, the speed versus knowing what you're doing out there. And it's not that I think Bond is like a terrible route runner or anything. It's just that Harris looks to me like a professional route runner, and I really enjoy watching those kinds of players.
Yeah. 5 for me is going to be Bond. I'm going to throw Bond at five. Again, he's got too much juice to not. And he's in such a situation. Like, how can you come away from that year? And again, unless injury happens or something else happens, like, he's in the perfect position to absolutely explode onto the scene this year. And again, he will have the NFL the traits once he gets to Indianapolis that NFL teams are going to fall in love with him.
And would it surprise you at all if he ended up with the Blitnikoff at the end of the year?
No. That's the situation he's in.
Yeah, that's the type of situation he's in at Texas.
Again, if Ewers can put the ball on him, which we've talked about at this
point. Well, he'll miss it a lot. Some of those downfield throws will be 20 yards in front of him instead of on him, but that just kind of comes with the territory.
Yep. I would say him and Burden are probably the top two candidates just because they're going to get force-fed targets like crazy. They're just going to get force-fed targets. Number six for me, I still haven't said Iuminor, and I'm still not just yet.
That's fine.
I'm going to go Sam Brown at six. Drops are such a volatile thing, and they tend to curb it. They tend to curb year in and year out. There's no, like, I mean, there are some guys we can't catch, like some guys who just have the actual yips that can never kick, right? But there are some guys they'll drop eight passes 1 year and catch everything next year. So I'm okay for now overlooking those a little bit. But if you can get open, man, if you can separate, if you're twitchy, if you got fast feet, I'm going to love you. I know it already. Like, I have that trend towards wide receivers who just get open. And I think Sam Brown's got that. And so I'm going to go Sam Brown right there.
Yeah. And I think I think we can end it at six. I think we've taken up enough of the good time of the good people out there listening and watching.
Yeah. I think it's a good place. Did you say your sixth?
Yeah. Yeah.
You said Bond. You said Bond.
Yeah. My sixth was Bond. Yeah. I couldn't rank these guys without it because it was such a tough decision between Bond, and Harris.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Awesome. Well, there's nine wide receivers down. So I think that's a pretty darn good episode. Again, next up is running backs. It's going to be a little bit. I'm going to Chicago. It's my anniversary weekend coming up over Labor Day weekend. So my wife and I are dropping the kids off with grandma and grandpa, and we are peacing out to Beantown and hanging out for a little while. But if I know my wife on a weekend trip like that, she's going to want to nap a lot. So I'm sure I'm taking my laptop and I'm going to be watching some running backs in Chicago as well. So, but I'm excited to get away a little bit, excited to be back as well. So, but until next time, this has been the Daft on Draft Podcast.
American Giant makes great clothing, t-shirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S., creating jobs in towns and cities across the country. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.